Blog Talk Radio. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, now I can hear you.
Oh, okay. This is Jay Real.
Sorry?
This is Jay Real.
Sorry, this is Adam Green.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought maybe Jonathan was going to answer first.
yeah.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say the movie was fantastic. Had the great flavor of the old 80s slashers, but modern touch as well. It definitely wasn't a rehash of those movies, but you definitely have your, you know, original touch on it. And I think you've given us what we've been looking for, which is the new Jason, the new Freddy. Victor Crowley is it. We need Victor Crowley comic books. We need a Hatchet Monopoly game. We need, you know, Victor Crowley action figures. So what's next with the character? What are you going to do with the character and with the, you know, what's his next adventure is going to be?
Well, the plan was always for there to be more Hatchets, which is why I left so much about Victor Crowley ambiguous in the first one. And that way, for the next film or the next few films, it wouldn't just be him killing people over again. There would actually be some story delivered to the fans. So hopefully that's going to happen. But at this point, I know the people who made the first one, it's in their best interest, obviously, to do a sequel right away. I have not agreed to do it yet. I kind of want to give it a beat and wait a little while and kind of step back from Hatchet for at least a little while before going in to do the sequel. I have a lot of other projects that I need to do. And a lot of it's going to depend on how well it does on DVD. Because if it doesn't do that well, then there will still be a sequel, but it's going to be an even lower budget sequel than the first one. And I definitely don't want to take part in that. So we'll see how it goes. But the plan is to make more.
Well, certainly I hope so. And I certainly understand you're taking time and, you know, doing it right, and hopefully that you're going to be involved, you know, in more of the Hatchet sequels yourself. Anyway, just what you've done with this one is you've made it fun again, and that's what was great about the early Friday the 13th movies, the early Nightmare on Elm Street movies. They were fun. They weren't grim, they weren't depressing, which seems to be a lot of what's coming out these days as far as slashers and horror films is sinking to the lowest common denominator. They seem to, when you get out of the theater, you feel like you've been, you know, kicked in the ass. You feel beat up. You feel, you know, pummeled and depressed. And
sort of the drive behind doing this was, you know, I'm a huge horror fan. I go see every horror movie that comes out, and for so long I just haven't been getting the thing that made me fall in love with it in the first place. And the one thing about horror fans is, like, people need to relax a little bit sometimes and understand that just because a movie is one way doesn't mean they all have to be that way or that somebody's trying to change it. I think the majority of people who saw the film who are horror fans felt like you did, just very refreshed and, oh yeah, you remember when this was fun. But there are the people that do like the torture stuff, and they only like how sick and depraved can you be. They don't want any entertainment. They don't want to laugh. They don't want a story. They just want to see people suffer. And so they were getting all scared by something like Hatchet, saying, really, is this where the genre is going to go? I don't want it to be funny. It's one movie. Like, go watch the other 99 that are out there. And
exactly.
Get something. So I definitely don't want to change horror. I don't want to do anything. It was just sort of kind of like just raising a flag up and being like, hey, you guys remember when? And people responded to that, which was great.
Well, thanks again for giving us Hatchet, and certainly looking forward to what you have coming out next. And a lot of fun. Certainly appreciate you you giving us, you know, what I've been looking for personally was, you know, something that's fun, that has everything we're looking for, the great gore scenes and the humor and the energy, particularly the energy you put into the film, something I've been looking for a long time. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, sir.
All right.
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Adam?
This is Adam.
Hey, Adam. This is LXA Griff. I think Johnson's having a little bit of a problem with his internet hosting.
Okay.
So I hate to hear you being left without anybody to talk to. I just wanted to jump in because recently I had the chance to talk with Tony Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And he expressed quite a bit of excitement about where his character can go with the sequel for Hatchet and continuing sequels. He seems to think that there's a real fertile ground there for his character to advance. I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about that.
Well, one of the things I tried to do with this one was set up the other films. So Tony Todd's character is actually very important in the whole story, and the fact that he knows what the real deal is with Victor Crowley and what actually happened to him. And his whole thing is he wants to monopolize the swamp and run his tours that he's not allowed to do. So in the sequel, if it's done, if my sequel is done, it'll be that we'll learn that Tony Todd purposely sent them on that swamp tour, that the bogus tour guide really worked for him, and he's got a plan behind all of this. So in the sequel, we would finally get to see Tony Todd and Kane Hodder face off, which would be awesome. But again, like, that's the sequel that I have in mind that I want to do, but I have not committed to doing the sequel as of yet.
Well, because from his first couple of moments on screen, you can almost kind of tell that he's got the puppet master thing going.
Yes. Yeah, and he was really good at that. We talked a lot about the character and what it would be in the sequel, and he really brought a lot to that in this one, which will make it really cool to see what he's really like in the sequel.
Well, and when you have a character of that caliber, an actor of that caliber, being able to explore that, I couldn't think of a better thing as a director to have a partner in crime when you get to the sequel.
Yeah, it would definitely be great, and I hope it all happens like that. It's with our theatrical run, we did very well for what we had, but I can't say I'm not disappointed that Anchor Bay didn't do more. No television commercials, no billboards, no anything, and they really just kind of threw it out there and waited to see what happens. And we beat everybody's expectations in what we did for not having any advertising behind it. But if that's the way that they want to do things with the sequel and stuff, like, I can't go and do a tour around the world rallying all the horror fans and, you know, spending years of my life on each one of these movies. So until they're going to step it up and really do it right, I'm not going to agree to do the next one yet. So they need another one to happen. They realize the money that they're sitting on right now with this, and the original financiers need it to happen. So they're all excited to move forward. I'm just purposely sort of being cautious right now and hanging back to make sure that it's done right. Because I hate to have them say, well, we could do it for even less money this time and doesn't matter. Or what if they say, you know, PG-13, it would have made more money, more theaters would have shown it. Like, I don't want to be part of it if it's going to be PG-13.
And then again, we've seen far too many shows that are remakes that go PG-13. And when they get to that lucrative DVD market, they just crash and burn.
Yes.
Really, I mean, if you're going to have the balls to make a movie, you definitely have to make it your way. And then, you know, your DVD market will come because, of course, you have the integrity to be able to make the movie that you wanted to make. If you want to throw an unrated, that's fine. But still, on the screen, if you're going for an R instead of a PG-13, you're actually seeing most of the director's vision.
Yes. Yeah. And
sorry, I don't mean to be so wordy, but I had these questions for the Anchor Bay guys. I just went to Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis, and they had Tony and Kane there helping to promote the film. They also did screenings. They did a couple of screenings of Hatchet, and that's where I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you got the report back from anybody from Anchor Bay or anybody who went to the convention, but the fan base there It was completely over the top for them. I didn't hear anybody walking out going, oh, this movie sucked, or why didn't they do this? A lot of the commentary was basically, this is good. This is something that we need. I mean, we're talking specifically about horror genre fans, but still, I mean, technically that's the target. Crossover's nice, but I didn't hear a single bad word come out of there from the fans themselves. Although I did have kind of a question about why they focused so hard on just the fan genre itself, because, you know, they were doing handouts and posters and all that stuff for Hatchet, but it didn't seem like they were going to do a mass media attack.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, like, the people who we worked with at Anchor Bay are great, and they had a lot of passion and heart, but it's the people higher up the food chain, the suits and the offices, they really don't know what they're doing yet. And they especially sort of lucked out with this title, and the fact that when we first premiered the film, nobody really got it. And because the suits who make the decisions they have no idea what they're doing anyway. And they were like, okay, well, the climate right now is it needs to be a remake, or it needs to be a torture film or a sequel, or it's got to be Japanese horror. And this was 2 years ago when that's all there was. We came out with this, that's why we made the tagline say it's not a remake, it's not a sequel, and it's not based on a Japanese one, because it was a big middle finger to Hollywood. And they didn't know what to make of that. So all the initial offers we got on the film were just horrible, like straight-to-video garbage. And I just said, no, nobody's going to get it, then I'm not going to sell it, and sat on it. And then we kept doing festivals and conventions, and the reviews kept coming in, and the audience reactions and the awards. And then all of a sudden, the suits were like, wait a minute, we actually do like this movie. and by that point, Anchor Bay had already committed to a theatrical, so we went with them. Like, literally weeks after we closed that deal, it's MTV's Top 10 Films of the Year, Anacool News Top 10 Films of the Year, Best Picture in France, Best Picture in Canada, Best Picture in Texas. And then everybody wanted Hatchet, and Anchor Bay had it. And this was the score that could have been their first kind of big thing. And everything else they have is an old title for the most part, and the new stuff they get is admittedly straight to video. So they were in a really good position here, and everybody that we were working with saw that, and they were like, this could be our moment. But the higher-ups from Stars in Denver or whoever it was making the decision said, great, if it's that good, then it'll do good without any support behind it, and they gave us nothing. So we still did remarkably well, though, because, like, for instance, in Los Angeles, they were hoping for a per-screen average of $3,000, which is very good.
Yeah.
And we did $14,500 on one screen.
Awesome.
And nobody could believe it. And same thing in, like, Austin and Baltimore and New York. We were selling out without any advertising. And then what did they do? They pulled it. And they said, great, we're going to make a killing on DVD. So it was hard for all of us who worked so hard on the movie, and we knew what we had was good. It had been validated by the fans, by the critics, by the awards that we won, and they didn't do enough. But unfortunately, and Lionsgate is the only place who really understands that model, which is if you throw $20 million behind a movie like Cabin Fever, it's going to do well because you shove it down everybody's throat. It's on buses. It's on billboards. It's on – and everyone is going to know about it, and they'll go see it. The only reason you go to see movies is because you know about it and you saw the trailer so many times. And we didn't have any of that. So, but I think there's a lot of people that weren't able to see it. It just wasn't even playing near them, even if they wanted to. So I'm really excited about the DVD. I'm really excited that the DVD is my version of the film and not the MPAA version, which had to go to theaters. I think tonally they kind of screwed the movie over a little bit, because by cutting back on the gore, they sort of castrated it a bit, and it was intentionally over the top and in your face and so bloody and unrealistic that it was fun. And by cutting that back, they actually made it a little bit more serious, which, you know, I kept trying to point that out to them. I'm like, okay, you guys are saying it's too intense. You're making it more intense by not showing this. Because if you pull off a dude's arm, that's pretty scary. But if you pull off a dude's arm and blood flies 40 feet in the air, that's funny. And they don't really have that type of sense of humor over there. They're not exactly a fun bunch of folks over there at the MPAA.
Well, the suits have a little problem figuring out the difference, how horror humor catharsis works. And that's where their big shortcoming is. I'm just curious, have you had the chance to sit in a screening room or in a theater to sit back and watch the movie play out? Both ways?
Dozens and dozens of times at this point. I was on the road for well over a year doing every festival all over the world, and I would go and I would sit and just watch the audience watch the movie. I mean, at this point, I don't think I could ever watch the movie again. I've seen it so many times, but it's really fun, especially to see it with different crowds from different places. For instance, you watch it in a place like Austin, and everybody's just screaming and laughing and cheering and high-fiving each other, but then you go watch it in Spain, and they're terrified. It's so scary. And that's been really fun to see the reactions, the way some jokes if you go and see it in a major city like New York or L.A., every joke hits every time. And then sometimes you go and you watch it somewhere like in Chicago even, and it's some of the jokes don't land. And the jokes work. We tested it. We knew. We showed it in enough places to know that they work. But it's just some people don't know what's certain things are. Like, there's a joke about where one of the girls went to school and trying to pretend she went to NYU, and she didn't go to NYU, she really went to Hofstra. And you watch that on either coast, and everybody's screaming, laughing. In the middle of the country, they just have no idea what's going on. So that's been really fun about watching it, because it's, you never take offense to it. It's just interesting to see how it plays and how it works. But certain moments, like Mrs. Primadio getting her head ripped in half, that's like the showstopper every time. And it's like, if you weren't into the movie yet at that point, you're into it. So it's always nice knowing that that's coming.
All the full blood and gore was there, and everybody was having a good time with it.
Awesome.
Well, I hate to say this, but I think Jonathan's still having problems getting back on. So I'll try to fill a little bit of time here, Adam. Now, from everything that I've seen with Hatchet, it's a great career starter. So I'm just wondering, where are you going to go from this, if in fact the sequel doesn't pan out?
Well, I already finished a film called Spiral, which will be in theaters February 8th. And that's with Joel David Moore, again, from Hatchet, who actually co-directed the film with me, and Zach Levi, who now everybody knows as Chuck on NBC, and Amber Tamblyn. And that's more like a Hitchcockian psychodrama, which is a complete 180 from Hatchet. And so that'll come out in just a matter of weeks. And then I have a comedy that Chris Columbus is producing that's supposed to start next year, kind of depending on the strike. And, so I just directed a pilot for MTV. I'm kind of all over the place.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Am I here? Oh, God. It was not – okay, because I was trying to, like, say words before, and I thought that you were cutting me off, Jeff, you know, like before or something. I was like, what is going on here? Why can't you hear me? And nobody could hear me talk. So now I just put on my cell phone and called up, like as a guest, I guess. So I'm back. Sorry about that. But I could hear everything you guys were saying, and I was like, you know, wanting to like talk about stuff about what's going on. So I felt kind of weird, you know, like a ghost.
Because I had some problems too with the hosting part. I don't know what happens, but it'll time out, and it'll disconnect you, or it'll put you in, or it'll put you into a mute. So glad to hear you're back.
Yeah, I'm glad too. Hey, Adam, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. So everybody's here. All right, good. All right, everything's back. I had a guest too, but I couldn't get him on because everything was acting silly. So hopefully, you know, Jeff, I tried before, you know, when you got cut off or whatever.
Yeah.
I was trying to see if that was going to help when I put you back on to put me on. So, you know, but that didn't work. So I just had to call in. Anyway, what I wanted to ask Adam is how did you go about getting investors interested in this movie?
The way we did it was basically we made it seem like there was no way that you couldn't invest in the film. Something that definitely helped is the fact that I had already done a feature film before. My movie Coffee and Donuts had wound up being bought by Disney and turned into a sitcom. So already having some success with that, I had an arsenal of short films I had done that proved that I knew what I was doing. And that was the first thing. The second thing was that we made a mock trailer for the film that made it look as if it had already been shot. And we made the mock trailer for about $4. And all we did, and this is all on the DVD and the behind the scenes, we show how we did all of this. We just kind of got a camera on a boat and shot a swamp for a minute. And we had a little girl tell the story of Victor Crowley, and that was it. And, we leaked it onto the internet. All the horror sites jumped on it. They were like, what is this? Has it already been shot? This looks awesome. So that way, when we went to investors, after they would read the script, after they would meet with me, after I would show them the storyboards and what it was going to look like, and we would show them the financial figures for if this is a hit, like look at a movie like Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, this is how much money it's grossed since the first one. If it's not a hit and it totally sucks and I screw it up and the movie's no good, you're still going to make all this money on DVD because of who we're going to get to be in it. So then we would leave and say, oh, tonight, just Google Hatchet online and see what happens. And they'd do it, and all of a sudden there's like 50 websites all raving about this movie that they want to see. So it was kind of a no-brainer at that point because we were making it so cheaply, you kind of had to be an idiot to not invest in it. And we had no problem getting the money at that point. Of course, once you get your money, then it's like a year before you actually get your money. And that's the frustrating part because we knew we were financed, we knew we were going, and then it's just waiting for that money to hit because there's all kinds of contracts, there's all kinds of stuff that has to happen. And that was kind of the frustrating point. And it also bit us in the ass a little bit because we made the mock trailer. A lot of people assumed the movie had already been shot. So 2 years later, we're still in production, and everyone's like, "What? Where is this movie?" And I thought it was coming out in 2005, and then the rumors start, oh, it wasn't any good, it got shelved. We weren't even done yet. So, but that's how we did it.
All right, hey, we have another caller. So do you want to take another caller? Or?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Hold on one second. 248. Hello? 248, you're on.
Yes. Adam, how does it feel to be interviewed by somebody who has not seen Hatchet?
I haven't yet seen Hatchet.
You suck, John.
So.
You suck. Nigger, nigger, nigger.
All right. Well, that was fun.
Hey.
Hey.
That was fascinating talk.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, I have not seen Hatchet yet, and everybody's kind of grilling me on that. They hate it. And I feel really bad, but I'm buying it on Tuesday, so I hope that helps.
See, Jonathan, you should have gone down to Times Square. They've already got it bootlegged out there.
Oh, you know, it's funny. I was having dinner with a friend in New York in Little Italy, and this was right when the movie was out, and this Korean woman comes up to me on the street. She's like, you buy a movie? And it's fucking Hatchet. I was like, no, thanks. I've already seen it. It sucks. And she walked away, but the girl I was eating dinner with was like, didn't you say something? Shouldn't you? Like, there's nothing you can do. You can't, like, she doesn't even know how to speak English, let alone what movie she's selling. And somebody just, you know, handed her a stack of movies and said, go sell them. But the illegal bootlegging definitely killed us with this movie, too, because it got downloaded so many times before it even came out. And apparently the version that was being downloaded was pretty high quality. It wasn't the finished film. But it looked okay. So, yeah, and when you're a big Warner Brothers movie or something like that, it's not really going to kill you. But a movie like this where literally, like, we were on so few screens that every ticket counted, if the people who had stolen it had just gotten onto Fandango and bought a ticket somewhere, it would have made all the difference in the world for a movie like this. But unfortunately, a lot of people out there think that I owe them something for whatever reason. So but they really, all they did is steal money from me. It's not like they were sticking it to the man. It's not like they were taking it out of a big studio's mouth. All they did is affect how well the movie did. So that really sucks.
Well, if it's any consolation, at least it was in every other bootleg video store that I saw at Times Square this weekend.
Awesome. That's great. I hope it makes those people a lot of money and that they get AIDS.
Well, if it's any consolation as well, it was the shit copy. So
good,
That's the boot off the net. So,
well, of course, you're not going to get probably the unrated version as the bootleg, right?
Probably not. But I still don't know where these even come from. It's got to be an inside job somewhere. A lot of times with a movie like this, because we did festivals. The movie goes through so many people's hands, and there are screener copies that go to the festival first for them to decide. And all those festivals have volunteers that are handling the stuff. Maybe they're the ones who grabbed it. But those screeners are temp screeners. Like, there's no color correction. There's no sound design yet. There's all the stuff that make a movie what it is, and it's not even on there yet. So that could be where they come from. Or it's unfortunately now with all the online journalism, a lot of those people are just like 14-year-old kids in their parents' basement, and they're not really journalists, but they play it off pretty well, and they can convince a publicist to send them a copy to be reviewed, and that's how it happens. But you can't live in fear of it and just keep the movie under lock and key, because with an independent movie like this, its success was based on people seeing it and saying stuff about it. So that's sort of how it happened. But, I mean, the numbers that we were seeing, like the very first day that the movie was in theaters, it had already been downloaded close to 50,000 times. And that doesn't mean that all 50,000 of those people could have seen it even. Maybe it wasn't playing near them. But if they downloaded it, especially if they liked it, if you liked it, get on Fandango and buy a ticket somewhere and don't steal it. If you hated it, then be like, yeah, good, glad I didn't pay for it. That movie sucked anyway. Like, fine. But it really, if like 5% of those people, 10% of those people had bought tickets, it would have made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I kind of feel bad, but, you know, I guess sometimes you want people to watch the movie at least see the movie, right, and get it out there. You know, but hopefully they'll go see it in the theater.
Right, and if you can't see it in a theater, at least see it on a good television, see it with surround sound, but watching it on a laptop in chunks, like, who would want to watch a movie like that? I don't understand it. But everybody, people are doing it, and the faster that the internet gets, the bigger of a problem this is going to be. And again, like, if it's a Universal movie, it's not really going to break their bank, but for an independent movie like this that had no support or money behind it, it really, really hit us hard. So it's too bad, but, I mean, as of Tuesday, it'll be out on DVD, and hopefully that's the way people are going to see it, because the DVD looks fantastic. They did a great job with it, and the special features are so comprehensive, and there's so many of them. And I think people, especially other people who are going to be filmmakers, I think that they're really going to enjoy watching it.
That's really great. I'm hoping that they go out and buy the Hatchet, you know, unrated edition coming out in, you know, stores on Tuesday.
Yeah, you know? And if you're at a place that only has the rated version, or that's all they're renting, or because I know some people, I've never heard of this, but apparently some people rent movies at McDonald's. Have you heard about
this?
Yeah,
that just opened. Redbox just started.
They only would take the R version, not the unrated version, so I would rather you never see the movie than see that version at this point. Get on Amazon.com, go anywhere else that you can, and see the unrated one, because the rated one, first of all, it doesn't have any of the special features on it. It's just the movie, and it's the movie that the MPAA made me put out. It's not the one that I made, so definitely get the unrated one. It's not any more expensive. In fact, the unrated one is cheaper in most stores. I think Best Buy, the unrated one is on sale, but the R-rated one is not, in an effort to make sure that people see the right movie.
Well, and also the great thing about it is, and I've said this forever, because I used to be a pirate and just download any movie that I could, but I found out that if you do, then you're missing out, because you're missing out on, any of, like you were saying, special features, any type of commentary, a cleaner copy, and also basically a better look at the director's vision. So, I mean, honestly, I never thought to buy or download Hatchet. Once I got the guest screening on it, I'm like, okay, well, I wonder what the filmmakers are going to say. So I'm on board for Tuesday to pick it up.
Thank you.
Are you at Dark Delicacies right now? Like, are you still doing the signing?
Not right now. We did that earlier today. It was at like 2:00.
Oh, okay. So I didn't want to like keep you from doing that. So, I had like a couple more questions, but how did you get Kane attached to the movie?
John Buechler sent him the script, and he liked the script, so he agreed to meet me for dinner. And then he sort of just really tested me at dinner, like, how are you going to do this? How are you going to do that? He just asked a lot of questions. And I think for him, this sort of came around at the right time, because just like 2 years prior, he had lost the role of Jason in Freddy vs. Jason. And then this kind of came along, and this was his chance to kind of reinvent himself, to invent a new character. And one of the best moments was first rehearsing with him, sort of beating the Jason out of him a little bit, because when he first put on the makeup, he started doing that, like, robotic, unfeeling walk and stuff. And I was, you know, we started talking more about what it was like to grow up as Victor Crowley, what, you know, where his mind is at and stuff. And then watching him start twitching and being more frantic and running and jumping and yelling and screaming and just, I think, was way cooler than what he did with Jason. So, and I know now, looking back, he's extremely proud of this. He's gone on record many times saying it's the best movie he's ever been in. And he made Victor Crowley such a cool character. So, psyched.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So that must have been awesome having Kane doing that for you. Hello?
It was hard not to bring all of my Jason stuff and have him sign it. You know, I was trying to not be a fanboy, and because obviously you don't want to spook your actor by being like, "Oh, I'm such a fan. Can you sign this? Can you sign that?" You know, you gotta
be professional, right? also, you have Freddy and the Candyman. So, I mean, it was almost like, yeah, you were giving it back to the horror fans right there. You know.
Yeah, and that was always the goal, and I'm satisfied in knowing that the horror fans who grew up on the stuff have really responded to it, and they had a great time with it, because that's who it was for. I mean, a movie like this is not going to cross over into, you know, being every high school kid's favorite movie necessarily. It's it was for a very specific audience, and I think having Robert Englund and Tony Todd and Kane in it sort of gave that stamp of approval on it, and it made the horror fans go into it open-minded and wanting to like it. So it was good.
Cool. Well, I want to thank you so much for calling in tonight. And is there anything else you want to tell all the fans that watch this, you know, are going to go out and buy the movie?
When you first put the movie in, it shows a bunch of trailers. Don't skip them. Watch the trailers, because the first one is for my next movie, Spiral, which comes out in theaters February 8th.
All right, cool. And, you know, I did want to, before I let you exactly go, you know, I want to say Joel Moore is awesome. And I really love all the, you know, him and all the shorts that you do and stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward to Spiral.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you for coming on.
All right.
All right. You have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
Good luck, Adam.
All right. Wow. That was Adam Green, everybody. That was really cool to have him on there. And thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on. We're supposed to have my friend Ricky Lee come on, but every time that I try to get him on, I didn't want to interrupt Adam to, you know, to bring him on, and then he just left. So try telling him to call in again, but I guess not tonight, maybe another night. This interview went a lot longer than I expected because of all the hiccups and problems, you know?
Well, stuff happens.
Yeah. How's your show going, by the way?
Oh, we just got back from New York City to film Lloyd Kaufman's cameo and Monique Dupree's cameo. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, we're kind of limping towards the finish line on it, but it seems like it'll be done, and we'll have our sound guy playing with it all of January. So life is good.
That's awesome, man. I'm really excited for to hear what happens. I like the fact that you got Air on the Head and Dread Central and all that to check out your stuff, like everything that you know, for the League of Extraordinary Alcoholics.
Yeah, LXA's getting pretty good feedback. We're also going to get a lead story on horrorfanatics.com, and I'm talking to the guys at Scars Magazine. They're talking about running some with photos instead of just a little blurb, so
yeah,
we're excited about that.
Yeah, definitely. And the one thing I want to mention about that is you definitely got to send the screener copy to Floyd Wonder. There, he's been really wanting to see it. You know, you piqued his interest in that article that he wrote for Dread Central.
Oh, I didn't write anything for everything that everybody's been pulling off so far. The only interview I've done.
Well, right now I'm saying is Floyd Wonder wants to see the movie when it's done because he really wants to check it out and I guess give a review of it. So whenever you got to send one to him too because he's a good guy.
Yeah, we're actually talking with not only with Lloyd Kaufman, but the people from the Backseat Film Festival. By the way,
mm-hmm.
great guys. If you guys
Doug Sackman.
Doug Sackman and Zafer Ulukul. Great guys, former graduates of the Troma Film School. They're also responsible for Punk Rock Holocaust.
I love that movie.
And 2's coming out on January 30th, just to give a little pimping for them, too. But we're talking about maybe getting them to come to Dayton, Ohio, which is the home base for the LXA, and possibly, since they're doing Poltergeist as a road show, maybe get Lloyd down sometime early part of next year to do a double bill of Poltergeist and LXA. So,
cool.
So things are great. Anybody who's involved in independent film, there's a lot of good stuff going on right now. There's a lot of great people out there, too, that are definitely willing to help you and spread the word no matter how much money you put in. And for those people, I am incredibly thankful.
Sweet. But how's your radio show going? Are you still doing that? Or?
We started. As a matter of fact, we just talked to the Backseat guys, and we spent about 2 hours with them sharing funny stories about how movies get made. And really, that's all independently speaking is about, basically people sharing their indie stories and basically how they got their stuff done. Because I know there's a ton of people out there.
Oh, so you recorded it and you're putting it on that way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Next week we have Chris Seaver on. And in the following weeks we have Harry Manfredini, Kevin Strange, Monique Dupree, Lloyd Kaufman, Ezra Buzzington. We've got it was really nice going out because I've gone out to conventions forever, but to get a chance to sit down and talk to these guys and say, hey, listen, do you want to come on and just talk about independent film? I mean,
I think Joe Francis might be calling in. Hold on a second, okay?
Oh, yeah, it's good to hear from Joe.
Hey, hello? 817?
Hey, Moody.
Hey, what's going on, Joe? How you doing?
Not much. You still talking to Adam?
No, Adam actually left. We were supposed to have a half hour for him, but we had to go over because of all these like audio problems. Blog Talk kind of screwed me on that because for some reason I'm calling in from my cell phone where my landline was having problems. So.
Ew, suck.
Yeah, so that was the big show, too, so I don't know what happened, but whatever. It's not a big deal. It all worked out. Hmm?
Does he have a website that he pimped or a place where people could hook up with him on MySpace?
I think, let's see, well, I know his actual website is ariscope.com, which is, I think, ariescope.com. So,
mm-hmm.
But also I think it's MySpace. If you just look up Adam Green through the search, you can find him. I don't know his like thing online. Like I think maybe a Hatchet's like Hatchet Movie or something.
Yeah, because
so.
Hatchet's on MySpace, but I haven't seen Adam Green's yet.
Yeah. So, anyway, so what's been going on, Joe?
Not much. Just working.
He's just working. Sorry you didn't get a chance to talk to Adam or ask a question, but have you seen Hatchet, right?
Yeah, I saw it a while back.
Yeah, well, some of the guys, I think Lewis called in to bitch me out about not seeing Hatchet and being and interviewing, you know, Adam Green.
You haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I didn't get a chance to.
Man, I saw it in theaters like 3 times.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, you were close, right, to a theater?
Relatively. I mean, I had to drive about 45 minutes to it, to the theater, because it was showing at a smaller theater around here.
Yeah, I wasn't able to be that lucky, so I wasn't able to see it. And I kind of feel bad because everybody I tried to get to go didn't like that theater, you know, that the theater that the AMC that they show it at has gone and got ghettoized. So nobody really wants to go because it's just, you know, especially not to a horror movie, because, you know, you're going to have those people screaming at the at the theater screen. You're going to have people, you know, somebody actually got shot a couple times there. So, I mean, it's not a pleasant environment. But we have a newer theater, like, you know, in my hometown. So everybody usually goes to there, but they don't show. They only have 12 screens. They don't show any.
I think whenever Hatchet came out is whenever Are We Done Yet came out, and I think the shootings were probably because black people were pissed off that Ice Cube was doing that movie.
And wasn't doing Hatchet?
No. How would Ice Cube do Hatchet?
That would be hilarious, though. Yeah, he was in the Anaconda, though. Yeah, see? Yeah, you can always do another horror movie. You know?
I can.
Even though I think Are We Done Yet was probably another horror movie anyway in itself. So, there we go.
Are We There Yet was cute. I didn't like the sing-along at the end, but it was a cute movie.
Did you go see it with your kid?
No, he's only one, dude. He sleeps in the movies.
Well, so anyway, what's going on with you, Joe? Like, what do you, you know, do you have any projects coming up?
Well, I just recently found the, I don't know if you remember the characters that I made a few years ago called Dork and Big Sur, but I found the tape, the original tape that had the footage on there that we shot, the only thing that we shot, and I recut the trailer as a 70s, like, exploitation trailer.
Hey, I think
put that up on YouTube.
I think Lewis is calling in again. Hold on a second. It's me. Hey, Lewis.
Just like to let you know that was not me that called. I would have came up with more original material.
Oh, come on, man. It was you. You had what is it? The number. It's the same number, dude.
Yes, it was a 248 number. You're correct, but it was not me. That would have been my friend Rob.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. But was he mad that I didn't see Hatchet either?
Yes, he was.
Oh, did you both see Hatchet?
Yes, we both did see Hatchet.
And you both but did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
It did not suck.
It did not suck. Okay, good.
It was not a low-budget picture.
All right. But anyway...
I was trying to call in earlier to bitch Adam out for going... 14-year-olds cannot have their own websites because I've turned a lot of people on the Hatchet from the review on my site, so he can go blow himself. And if anyone knows, he did kind of sound like Eli Roth. People do like my movie. I lost respect for him.
Well, in all fairness, the difference between Eli and Adam at that time was Adam was trying to make money off of this thing to actually end up doing more movies, and Eli has already established himself. And then you shouldn't have, you know what I mean? He shouldn't have been that like that. You know what I mean? There's a big difference between Adam and Eli. They just sound similar now because Adam's got bigger marketing.
Sounded like a whiny bitch.
All right. Let's just not go there anyway right now. So, Joe, you haven't talked to Lewis in a long time, have you?
It's probably been close to 6 or 7 months.
Well, that's actually kind of a long time. That's probably as long as I haven't talked to Nate.
No, I haven't talked to Nate in forever since he went on Christian on us.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. I've sent him a couple messages, but he doesn't really respond. He had a new kid and found God. And found God's kid, and Merry Christmas.
There you go. There you go. Well, it's almost, the show's almost wrapped up anyway. Like, we got about 4 minutes or 5 minutes left. So,
did Joe tell you the reason we stopped talking?
Because he ripped me off on an Xbox.
Is that true?
I sent him an Xbox with child pornography on it.
That's awesome.
Which it worked out because I traded the Xbox to a guy that gave me a laptop with child pornography on it, so that was just, that's kind of weird.
So one trade-off for one child pornography to another. There you go.
So does the Independent Corner support child pornography?
No, it doesn't support child pornography. It just makes jokes about it.
So it supports it.
It doesn't support it. It supports making fun of it.
Does it make it?
No. Sorry, it doesn't make child pornography. But, you know, Ricky Lee was supposed to call in, Joe, but, you know, we're going to talk for a little bit about what's going on with him and other stuff that's going on. But, but
he's a busy dude.
Yeah, he's a busy dude. He's got a web show that he's working on. So hopefully that'll, you know, hopefully that'll be a hit with the Path of the Dead.
I'm sure it will be.
Huh?
He's a hit maker.
Yep, especially with Survival. There you go.
The chart topper. No, I wouldn't.
Everyone
say that.
Dies at the end.
Hmm? All right, Lewis. All right, let's not get nasty here, okay?
That's not nasty.
Well,
nobody's gonna see it anyway.
No, I'm just saying. He knows what I'm talking about.
I'm gonna put it
about.
Up for download. I'm gonna put it on a BitTorrent site.
Anchor Bay got rights to it.
free download for Survival. If you could put it on YouTube, you would, wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't put it on YouTube. I'd put it on Google Video for the crappy compression.
Nice.
Yeah, if Anchor Bay got it, then we'd have a new edition every 3 years. That'd be pretty sweet.
The new Evil Dead? Pretty nice.
Like Evil Dead, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Everyone dies at the end except Bruce.
All right, see, nobody else gets that joke anyway.
Just you and me, Top Ramen.
Just us three. So there you go. But
so what about your projects, Moody? How's
I've got
S versus Y.
S versus Y. We're aiming for a shoot date in May, which because it's gonna take probably that long just to get investors interested. And money saved up for seed money and stuff, but we're also planning. Keith Stoddard, my co writer, and I are planning two other projects other than that. So that
just
are
get a couple monkey suits and shoot it.
I don't want to do like a really bad version of it.
CGI.
Never. I would
CGI
never want to do that because then all of a sudden nobody will want to actually end up having it really made, you know. But I've got a cool producer that's actually hopefully going to be attached to it once the script gets finished and finalized.
Kevin Woods.
Well, I would love to have Kevin have some kind of part in it if he can.
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, not so much. I don't think he'd even know what a Sasquatch and Yeti are. So I don't know.
The same thing.
They're built from science, so I'm sure he would.
Yeah, I was going to say, they probably are members of the Scientology.
They are. And so are CGI monkey suits. CGI monkey suits should have its own MySpace page.
The Scientology thing's going to get me banned from this stuff
for
life.
No, only if you...
All right.
If you prank callers on Fixer Radio.
All right, come on.
CGI monkey suits.
Anyway,
you should rename the
work.
Show movie.
Hey, are you still planning on getting the director of Suburban Sasquatch on your show?
I'm going to look into it real soon. It's just right now I have a couple cool guests lined up that I don't have anybody for Thursday, but
I just watched one of his other movies called Fungicide, and it was amazing.
You see, that's the thing. I don't know. I haven't seen any of his movies again.
Yeah, but you didn't see Hatchet.
I know I didn't see Hatchet. I mean, so I am willing to interview him, but I don't know.
You can
they
buy
only...
Fungicide on Amazon for $2.
They were supposed to send me a screener for Hatchet, and they just never did. So it just
oh,
never.
Oh, he's bitching about people downloading it for free, and he's sending out free screeners. What's that?
Well, actually, the manager was sending out. Was going to send out the screener.
Oh,
just...
so his manager is giving away his money? That's not
I guess. Good. I don't know. But, yeah, it just never happened. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why they thought I was going to go around and bootleg it.
Well, in Fungicide, they had like, giant mushrooms that farted other mushrooms on people. And there was a giant mushroom that came silly string on people and made their faces melt. It was pretty awesome.
That sounds
not a lie. I'm not making that up at all.
That sounds awesome. That sounds like a movie that I would love to watch eventually. Hopefully, yeah. Unfortunately, Joe, you bought the last copy of that thing that you were telling me about, the package that had that in it.
Yeah, drenched.
Yeah, you're the only. You know, I went down to check it on Amazon.com, and it was all gone.
That sucks.
Out of print or something like that. You know, not available. So
weak. Maybe I'll have to make you a copy if I have his blessing.
His blessing? Yeah, sure. Make sure it's cool with him. But also, you know, I would love to have him come on, sometime soon. I don't know, you know, I think Thursday might be a little short notice, but Wednesday, hopefully I'm having Larry Kinney on my show.
Who's that?
The voice of Lino from Thundercats.
Why would you want him on your show?
Why not? Because he's the voice of Lino.
But Thundercats is no good.
Oh, come on. I love the Thundercats. That's kind of what I grew up on. That, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and a G.I. Joe, and Real Ghostbusters were my shows on Saturday morning cartoons.
So have fake Bill Murray come on.
I don't know, I don't know if I can or not. What's his name, like Lorenzo or something?
Lorenzo Tate?
No, I forgot what his name was, though, but he was a,
I think it was actually Ice Cube.
Yeah, he has a, I don't know, Lorenzo Music.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, that was his
name. Yeah, he had an R&B album.
He did what?
He had an R&B album out.
For real?
Yeah, after Garfield. After he finished up with Garfield, he started putting out R&B albums.
That's kind of funny. But yeah, he.
To download them on BitTorrent.
I don't download BitTorrent. Sorry. Because my computer has been crashing lately, so I don't.
Oh, it's not because it's illegal?
Yeah, it's because it's illegal. But anyway, yeah, so that's what's going on here. I guess Lewis just left. He didn't say goodbye. So,
that's rude.
There you go. Yeah. Oh my God. But yeah, the show is like kind of over, except you know how it does where you can talk for like another hour or so. So they can't hear us like, you know, live. So they'll have to hear the archives. But I've made it an hour long just in case something were to happen and Blog Talk messed up for some reason. And I guess I needed that. You know, I was glad I made it an hour long. Because originally it was just going to be a half hour and have him come on and talk, and then that's it. But then I wanted to talk a little bit about what was going on with, everything. So, oh, and I guess we lost Joe, too. Hey, are you still there? Jeff?
Yep.
Okay, well. All right, well, I guess I'm going to have to end it because it seems like Blog Talk's kicking people off or something, or whatever. So.
Well, it could be because the tech problems I've been running, it just keeps going and keeps going.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, it always gets like this when more and more people start, taking over the airlines and, airwaves and stuff. So I don't know what's going on exactly, but anyway.
Just to put in a little love for mine, you can always find us on IndieSpeak on the on the MySpace for independently speaking. Like I said, we've got Chris Siever, the king of...
yeah, I've had him, I don't know if you've known this, but I've had him for like three of my old shows, like back in the day when I started this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a good friend of mine, so he's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing Ski Wolf, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, we're gonna pimp out Ski Wolf and the wide release of Teenage Goes to Camp too.
Teenage Goes to Camp in January, I think, right? January.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think
at the same time he's going to start shooting Teen Wolf or Ski Wolf. Sorry.
Ski Wolf. Yeah, I'm really excited to see Ski Wolf. Did you just hear the news about who they got for in Ski Wolf?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was talking about they were in talks with him about 3 or 4 weeks ago, but he didn't want anybody to say anything until he finally got him locked on board.
Yeah, it's locked. It's definitely locked. He's got Stuart Fracken.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
That was announcement made today, so I'm really excited just to see, like, because he's excited about it, even though nobody really knows the name, you know, Stuart Fracken and whatnot.
Well, they'll know the face.
Yeah, and they'll know who he is when they see him. So he's gonna play like apparently a character, like a same kind of character or whatever from Ski Patrol.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So that's really cool. I think that's a really cool thing to see, you know, Chris do. And for some reason, I see this as being his way of getting in, because it's gonna be released by Sub Rosa.
Yeah.
Who I love, because they released one of my favorite indie movies, which is Hey Stop Stabbing Me.
Oh,
you ever seen that movie?
Yes, I have.
I love that movie.
I brought it over one night, and yeah, that movie's very good to make a drinking game too.
Well, they even say that in the commentary, I think. You know, but yeah, Worm and Patrick are good friends of mine too. So, Worm more. So I don't really talk to Patrick as much, but both of those guys are really cool people who went out there. And the way I found out about them is through Dorm Days and seeing Danielle Fishel and Tatiana Emali in that movie. And then found out who are these writers, you know.
Speaking of Ski Wolf, also, the SAC just told me he's going to be on it too. Doug Sackman's going to be playing a role.
Sweet. I'm really excited for that, too, because did you know Doug and Zephyr were in some of Chris Siever's earlier works?
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of
they
fact.
They were in, Anal Paprika 3, and I think they were in a couple other ones.
Well,
Mulva.
Well, we talked about Zephyr doing the only prosthetics Teen Ape, because he did Teen Ape in Mulva.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and
sorry, but that was the worst Teen Ape that I've ever seen. Oh, like put the man back in the monkey mask, because that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, that one looked kind of bad. And actually, have you ever seen Anal Paprika 2?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I hooked up with Siever in the last convention, I got to. They had 2 and 3 on one disc, so
right.
I got a chance to see those.
Yeah, I've got those 2 and 3, and the funny
the
thing about
versions, finally.
Yeah, well, I've got them all actually, except for Teen Amp Goes to Camp and Wet Heat, which I should be buying soon from him, but I don't know. We'll see, because he wants me to get them, because those are the two that I don't have. But
did you
I
pick
just
up Karaoke Kid yet?
I picked them all up. I picked everything
okay.
else up on that site. I mean, I'm, you know, he knows I'm his like one of his number one fans, not his number one fan, because one of his number one fans gives me, you know, buys everything he possibly can, including like some of the rare items that, and gives him money for, you know, shoots and budget and stuff. So.
Well, you live close enough to him. Why don't you jump in and do a cameo?
That's up to him. And we've talked about it a couple times, and it's just not going to work. Yeah, I mean, because he just doesn't have a part for me. Don't ask me why. We're friends, but, I guess he only asks the people who are really close to him, like, you know, in his, like, neighborhood and stuff, really, to kind of, other than, like, big-time If by some chance, like Sasquatch vs. Yeti and, you know, all the other stuff that I do, if I'm acting in them and whatnot, and he sees me as a part, he might put me in something, but...
Now, yeah. What was the other one? I just got a friend request for the Scream Queen Divas.
Scream Queen Divas, yeah. That's hopefully going to be either right before or right after Sasquatch vs. Yeti. We're doing Plan 8 first.
Yeah.
Plan 8 from Outer Space, mm-hmm. which I'm really, really, really excited about because we just realized we've come across a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we might be making this the biggest B movie to hit since Zombiegeddon.
Well, like, I tell you, the only way to do it is just to go do it. I mean, if you got a little bit of money,
exactly.
You can, because that trailer, I mean, if you could make a trailer, that's what got my investor into it. I showed him a trailer
right.
And said, listen, we need fun.
We're probably going to do that because my friend Brian that I work with is saving up some money to buy a $3,500 camera, you know, like a Sony nice digital camera. And if he gets it, what?
You can get some really decent ones that have the 3cc chips in them for roughly about between $1,000 to $1,200 right now, and those will allow you to do digital color correction if you need to, anything like that to do wash effects, especially if you're using Adobe Premiere Pro and After Effects with it.
Through MySpace, send me some links to things that you know of, you know, mm-hmm. if you've come across any, because I am willing to show them other cameras, because I did see some, I saw a $2,000 CCD camera that, you know, was like Panasonic or something, that looks like something that, you know, even the Canon XL1 is a pretty decent camera, and I think that's even less than $3,500.
Well, if I can pimp out any space that really helped me starting off, it was sunnyboo.com, Peter John Ross's website. He's been doing editing and camera work for over 15 years, and they've got a section on Sunnyboo, which basically just has set up, here's the type of camera you should go after, you know, here's the basic features. You can shoot with a crap camera, but here's what you need. In order to be able to, you know, when you get into the post-production aspect of it, to make it a decent or at least a good-looking movie. And that stuff's basic kindergarten walk you through by the hand, and I'm glad it was there because that's what helped me out a lot as far as my choices to buy cameras and such.
Let me ask you, would you watch a movie that, you know, I mean, this is just going to be on the radio, and this is just kind of throwing it out there, but would you watch a movie that has, like, Robert Zadar and, William Smith and Joe Estevez and, you know, a lot of people, like, have you seen Zombiegeddon?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, pretty much 9 of the people from Zombiegeddon are people that I'm about to talk to, hopefully, about being in Plan 8. So...
Have you talked to the Asylum people? Because I know they do a lot of work for Asylum Studios.
Who does?
Especially the Estevez boys.
Joe Estevez?
Yeah.
I don't think they work for the Asylum. The Asylum? The Asylum Home Entertainment?
Yeah, he was just in... which one was it? He was just in, actually, Hell Asylum. I think that went out through Tempe eventually, but I think it was initially done by the Asylum people.
I don't think so. Because Hell Asylum was, I think, always a Full Moon production, I think. But I don't know.
It was just in.
I've got some people who know these people.
Yeah.
Who said that they can give me a good, hopefully a good deal with them. So hopefully I'll ask these people if they can help me get them. But a lot of the people I'm hoping, I mean, even if it's just like a small role, because I'm going to have so many freaking people in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly I'm going to have, you know, really a lot of those people are just going to be a day or two part, you know, that they're just going to have, like, I'm just going to film them for a day or two.
Yeah, that's where your line producer comes in. You got to have a kick-ass line producer for that, because I know the schedule is going to be. We've been messing around with trying to get Lloyd Kaufman in for months now. I mean, literally months. And Monique, and I mean, we didn't really have a line producer to set a schedule up to say, okay, this is the day we're going to do this, and this is the day we're going to do that.
Yeah, hopefully we'll buy one of those software that work on the scheduling and stuff like that. Whatnot. If we buy one of the software, we're gonna give it to somebody who will one of the many guys that I know that will go across and try to figure it all out. You know what I mean?
Just find your anal retentive logical friend and give them that assignment, because that's
right.
Usually what works out the best. Because I can't tell you how many times. I mean, we had a really good schedule as far as who could be on set and what times. But when it came to shooting all the cameo stuff, it just completely went out the window because we had to go to them to get it.
Oh, man. Yeah, and, you know, and Lloyd Kaufman is, like, we kind of want Lloyd Kaufman in the movie. He's one of the 9 people from Zombiegeddon that we like. But since it's going to be playing 9 kind of parody,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way, like, originally it was going to be my homage. But really, you can't make an homage or anything like that because you could get sued. I didn't realize this.
You can do an homage as long as you don't use any of the actual characters.
Well, okay, you have to understand. I put up this MySpace site for Plan 8,
mm-hmm.
and then I kind of made the evil dread.com thing. I sent it to them talking about it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought I was going to get some interest in. All of a sudden I was getting people going, oh, man, this sounds awesome. It's got to get made. And this is like almost a year ago, actually,
mm-hmm.
that I was, like, planning this. And that's how long a movie, like a concept, will really get, you know, like, really start annoying people because you'll be like, oh, my God, I have this great idea, but we can't make it because blah, blah, blah.
Well,
you
I spent 4 years on the LXA script before I even bothered to put anything out on MySpace. I put up the MySpace, I'd say probably a couple months before we started doing the auditions, just to make sure to keep everything fresh. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is, you know, knuckle down and get some stuff shot, because in that way you're also going to be able to find your crew too, the people that
right.
are going to stick with you. And I mean, I had PAs, but the thing about it is they were all good at something, but they weren't good at everything. So we
yeah.
had to make sure and lock them down.
What we're hoping to do is we're hoping to my co-producer and I, my friend Nick, who kind of like helps me with everything, kind of gets me. He might actually end up being my line producer. I might give him the stuff because he's you know, he's pretty level-headed. And me, I'm so warped about just all this other crap, you know, that I'm just not going to be able to do stuff like that. But what I'm going to do is what we might end up doing is shooting a teaser trailer that won't have really anything to do with the movie, because really other than having the because the aliens will have to be done. Hopefully we'll get Ricky Lee Leonard, the special makeup effects guy I was talking about, to help us out with the makeup design. He's interested in doing it. And there's, you know, we're going to get, like, all these people. And what I want to do is something, apparently, I guess you're going to hear it first, and anybody who hears this is going to hear this, but we're hoping to, have you ever read a book? It's about Ed Wood's life. It's called Nightmare of Ecstasy.
No, haven't.
But it talks about his life. It's about Ed Wood's life and about what, you know, it's basically the basis for the Ed Wood movie by Tim Burton.
Yeah.
You know, and Nightmare of Ecstasy has a thing where the makeup effects guy had a great idea for what the aliens should look like,
mm-hmm.
and he describes it in the book, and I think it would be awesome to do something similar to that, you know, but not completely make it, you know. I don't know. I think it'll be great.
And the thing about it is, you got to take a look at somebody like Ed Wood. He was truly psychotic. when it comes to the point of he didn't really care what it took. He got the movie done. And I think a lot of...
See, that's the problem also. That's also the problem is it came out to look, you know what I mean? It looked worse because he was all psychotic about budget and time and, you know, everything like that.
Yeah, but he was always thinking that, you know, this movie he gets made will help him to finance the next movie that'll get made. So he never crushed out any optimism. I mean, I know he basically always thought about time constraints. You know, they even, you know, locked him out of studios many times and withheld his prints. But it's just that type of enthusiasm, which is going to be the only thing that gets any of these new independent filmmakers through. Because there's a lot of people out there with great ideas that don't do dick with them because they're waiting and waiting and waiting. We did exactly what you were talking about. We shot a teaser trailer of zombies in a graveyard, made it look like real-time stuff, like, you know, this is an actual event kind of thing that happened. It had nothing whatsoever to do with the movie. But we had to shoot it for two reasons. First of all, to get something shot, to say, hey, we're serious, we mean business. And the second was just to give the crew some incentive to say, hey, this is going to be shot. So,
and that's what Adam said he had done too. Adam Green had just mentioned that he had shot something just to show investors that he could do it. And then, you know, then it became what it, you know, then later on they got mad when they thought it was all done, you know, and where is this movie? So.
Well, and it depends, too, because Trey Parker walked into several places when he was doing Cannibal the Musical. And the only thing that he had done was gone out on a weekend and spent the time on a trailer. And then he just went around and said, we need completion funds. We need completion funds. And he got up to, I think it was like $260,000 that he got to actually finish the movie.
Yeah, we're really, like, technically, we're only trying to do like $20,000 to $30,000 at the most. And some of that's going to my executive producer, who's helping me kind of create a studio. He's my co-writer.
Yeah.
And then some of the rest of the money is going to the actual movie itself, you know, and everything like that. So into the to different, you know, to this movie and to helping Scream Queen Divas get made.
You'll never have a problem as long as you can look at the film and say, all my money's up there on the screen. Because that's the one thing that I'm proudest of. I have 93 minutes with another 6 minutes to shoot, and I can say unequivocally everything that I look at of footage, all my money is up there on the screen and definitely not in my bank.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that's the thing, though. I'm not trying to get into the movie-making business to make money. I'm going there, which is kind of getting me down because there's a lot of people out there right now that is going around saying that they want to make movies to get money and to get rich and, you know, telling me you got to do it for this because otherwise, you know, you're going to, you know, otherwise you're not going to be able to get a theatrical distribution and you're not going to have this and you're not going to have that. I'm like, you know, my idea is I don't need that, you know.
Well,
I just want to make a
movie. Good enough. If your movie is good enough, you're going to have distributors coming to me. Well, like I said, I have three different distributors that I'm talking to, and I haven't released a frame of film yet. The only thing you can see for LXA is what you see in the vid section on the MySpace page. I have not sent out any rough cuts, no ash cans or screeners, and they're still like, this is a great concept, let us know more about it, send us a screener. It's like, nope, not till it's done. I mean, even with meeting Lloyd Kaufman, it was straight out, no, I'm sorry, I don't have a copy for you to take a look at. Because I want it done, and then I'll turn it over. Well, plus it also helps to keep the excitement with them.
Did Lloyd talk to you about possibly having Troma distribute it?
Yeah, I can't go into that. But
okay.
Lloyd's a nice guy. He's a very nice guy, very, very amenable. He's like talking to your step uncle.
His uncle Lloyd, step uncle
Lloyd.
Yeah,
I mean, even though we did make a joke about, you know, trauma stands for tits are our main attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, we want to bump up the nudity a whole lot more in the movie. But, yeah, he got a laugh from that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I love the way Troma is, but really, I wouldn't. I wouldn't give my first, you know, movie to them, you know, or anything like that. Because, and it's not because of Lloyd's being a bad distributor. It's just, you know, you don't, because you put it out there, you don't get anything back. And really, I'd have to make some money back in order to kind of pay off the actors that, you know, that go through all this stuff. Because,
well, yeah, the key word is give for Troma, because you truly do give them your film.
Right. And you give it to them, and then you don't expect anything back except for people seeing the movie. And
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what they did with Cannibal the Musical was, you know, I read that thing. Did you read Make Your Own Damn Movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did you read that thing that Trey Parker said about how, you know, pretty much he wasn't, you know, he basically made that movie, and you know, he made Cannibal the Musical, and then nobody else would buy it because they didn't know who the hell he was.
Well, and he
then,
also made a, in the commentary for Gasmo, he talks about how he basically just like handing over the keys to his car because he didn't get shit. He got nothing but a little name recognition, but then again, they didn't bother to pimp the movie until he did his Christmas thing, which got him South Park.
Right, exactly. I mean, that was his thing. Exactly. He didn't get anything until all of a sudden he was famous, and then all of a sudden, you know, now he's kind of getting he was getting the recognition. So it's kind of – I kind of feel bad for him that he kind of got the short end of the stick when – they could have been like, oh, listen to this awesome, you know, cannibal movie that has music. And if a lot more people had seen it, maybe a lot more people would have liked him before he even did South Park. But, you know,
well,
whatever,
also,
he still did South Park, and that was great. So.
Well, and also there's still not a lot of heavy hitters out there as far as it goes for independent distribution. But there are some good ones out there that will get behind your movie. Maybe throw a couple $100,000 behind it with the promotion and the release and all that stuff. The one thing that the distributors I've been talking to are excited about is the simple fact that I'm coming to them with all my special features together.
Yeah, already, right?
Yeah, so there's nothing that they're going to have to shell out extra bucks for, with the exception of being able to commercialize it for me.
That's the one thing I like about, you know, SRS Cinema, which is Sub Rosa,
mm-hmm.
is they are very, you know, special feature friendly. You know, they'll let you put pretty much anything you want on your special features. And what I was kind of bummed out about is, you know, I said I was a big Hey Stop Zapping Me fan, but I've been talking to Worm for a while, and I've been trying to get copies of his other movies, and they're supposed to be being released too, but, you know, nothing.
Well, with Sub Rosa and places like Tempe, they do actually end up getting a backlog, so sometimes it's a little difficult for them to...
Well, they're supposed to do a movie. They did a movie. They put it out for Sub Rosa called I Was a Teenage Frankenstein's Roommate.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't like it anyway. So I guess when it got when they ran out of print, nobody had bought it, so they didn't really care about it, and neither did Worm and Patrick. So they ended up, you know, spending the time in making Hey Stop Stabbing Me, which is a much better movie than getting it sold by, you know, Sub Rosa, who loved it, you know. So plus they're trying to make a movie called get a movie done out there called Murder Made Easy, but has a lawsuit with the director of photography who stole their real print, you know. They had like the crappy prints, but the guys stole the real prints of the movie, and they tried to re-release it, and I think Sub Rosa wanted it, but they had too much problems with the director of photography, so they had to scrap it. And I think they are still trying to get it out there, but, you know, I don't know. I like those guys, you know, the Hey Stop Sad Me guys, Amazing Schlock guys, so.
Well,
check out more of their stuff.
And really, a lot of the big things about independent film is that it is catering to a specific market. My whole thing when I saw Hatchet out at the show was, I think these guys are being a little bit too specific, catering to a market, which was driving me nuts, because Hatchet could have received a better release. Not to be whiny about it, but I mean, it pretty much, it could have crossed genre. It could have gotten in more people to use it like a date movie than any other ones, because I mean, there's a ton of crap out there, like Wolf Creek sucks, and you know, they had that released, but then again, they had I believe they had Lionsgate back behind them on that one.
Well, all these movies, including High Tension and all these movies that I just don't like, and then the directors end up making, and then they end up becoming really, really famous, you know, or whatever, move on to a bigger movie. You know, because I really did not like. You saw High Tension, right?
Yes.
I hated that.
And the movies to Die For, which out of the first eight, there are only two which were even semi-palatable.
You know what I liked of the eight to Die For? That the only one I saw and the only one I'll probably watch right now is I really, really liked Unrest. And I'm actually, you know, I'm talking to the director, hopefully getting him on the show sometime. But he's, you know, have you seen that?
Yeah. I saw the first eight. The only two that I really liked were Grave Dancers was really good, and Joyride was a lot of fun.
Yeah, some people did not like Joyride, from what I understand. Or Dark Ride, you mean? Dark Ride.
Dark Ride, excuse me, yes.
Yeah, the roller coaster, like the amusement park one or whatever.
Yeah, the Dark Carnival ride.
So anyway, I'm, I don't know. Have you seen Unrest, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't, because of the fact that they were being just a little bit too whiny about everything. It's like, okay, the character, you know, the hooker's dead. Why is she dead? What's going on with that? And they really never got into the terror part for me, because I didn't even know where the demon soul was coming from.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of creepy. To me, I don't know. I was kind of creeped out by it, but that was just me, I guess. I don't know. I liked it a lot. And, you know, I like the director. I've talked to him before on the phone, and we were supposed to have one show with him and Corey English.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't work out, and then Corey couldn't, for some reason Corey couldn't make it or whatever, and then we tried to reschedule, and then just stuff happened, and then I hadn't talked to him for like month until just recently. And then we might be sometime in January or so. But I can't believe that Joe didn't like Thundercats. Let me go back to that real quick.
Okay.
You know, like, when he was talking about my, hopefully my guest on Wednesday?
Yeah.
You know, being the guy from, being Lion-O, the guy that is the voice of Lion-O.
Well, you know, but I can see where he's falling through on the generic animation set, because back then there were a ton of toy cartoons coming out.
Right.
Silverhawks being the evil twin brother of Thundercats.
Right, exactly. All these ones coming out and then trying to, like, you know, Thundercats is kind of Lino's like a very He-Man-ish character, but then also there's She-Ra, the spinoff of He-Man, and there was all of these, you know, TV shows, including cartoons and, you know, the Saturday morning cartoons that I just love. But, you know, but I guess, yeah, a lot of people didn't like them because they kept coming out and being made and then copying other ones and then, you know.
Well,
trying
and
to
pimping
merchandise.
Just for the virtue.
Yeah,
pimping
just, doing
just for the virtue of selling toys, too. That's another one that made the actual series very disingenuous.
Right, and you know what? When the movie comes out, because they're making the movie of Thundercats, which I hope they do live action, because there's a lot more stuff they could do nowadays that they probably couldn't do back in like the 80s.
Well, they got away with it for Transformers, so the gates are completely open on that one now.
Right, but I don't really, I wasn't that big of a fan. Talk to Chris Seaver about Transformers, and you will have him like talking for like hours.
huge Transformers fan. But me, on the other hand, I'm not a huge fan. I was never really a Transformers fan. I never really got into the TV show. I didn't care about these cars that could turn into robots. You know, like, it just wasn't. Yeah,
well, but it's the success of one breaking out of the genre that's going to open it up for all the other ones.
Right. No, I mean, I understand that. I wasn't a big fan. So I know, I'm glad that Transformers did get made, you know, and I did actually buy it and everything to have it, because I thought I didn't actually see it, but I was like, oh man, I'm probably going to, I didn't like the TV show cartoon, but I'm going to probably love the movie because it looks cool, but
I don't know. Yeah, the effects were definitely out there. Then again, if you're doing over $100 million movie, then you better have it all up on the screen, which they did. I mean, it's all cheese because you're basing it off of a toy that they made into a cartoon to sell more toys, and that, you basically have to run from that. The times that I grew up and the stuff that I watched, silly crap like Speed Racer, which, had no toy line. It was just basically, let's get people to watch cartoons kind of deal. Or even something as 70s as Super Friends. They really didn't go out on a toy line until much, much later.
Not until the 80s, definitely.
Yeah, the whole, well, when they turned to Super Powers. Then they started making toys off of it. But, the whole point was, let's make something that's going to entertain the kids so they'll, stay and want to watch the next segment because we're running our commercials through there for all of our sugary cereals.
Cool, yeah. I'm hoping I do talk to Larry Kenny because he was on a show he was on a radio-like podcast I listened to called MattBlank.com. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he talks to a lot of people from the animation and TV world, and he talked to like Dennis Haskins, who played Mr. Belding, and he talked to the lady who plays Bart Simpson. He does the voice of Bart Simpson and stuff like that. But he was interviewing Larry, and it was just great because he asked Larry to talk in the Lino, if he would talk in the Lino voice.
Yeah.
And he did. And I was just like, oh, man, I got to ask him to do that. Because and answer a question in the form of Lino. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Well,
I mean, that's the only chance you'll ever get to do that.
Nancy, the lady who does Bart Simpson's voice.
Oh.
She actually graduated 2 years after I graduated from the same high school.
Oh, cool.
She's an Ohio native. Yeah, there's a lot of Ohioans around. I found out that once I started going around asking to get people on the show that the Midwesterners are really kind about everything to be able to get them on. And one person said to the other, hey, I'm doing this. Do you guys want to do it? And It's just amazing that I just went up to people and said, hey, I just want to get you on to talk about this. And everybody's been really receptive. I'm booked until the end of February now, which is just nuts.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. That's awesome that you've got your show that's becoming a hit. I mean, in a way, I think that's really great, and I'm really proud of you. I'm glad that things, I think if, I don't know, did you, hear my show first, or did you hear other shows and then find my show? I know you found it through Monique, right, originally?
Yeah, I found it through.
And that's actually how I met Keith Stoddard, who became my co-writer for Sasquatch vs. Yeti, is through Monique's show. So I really thank Monique in a lot of ways, but,
she's a sweetheart. We're having trouble getting her on camera, but we certainly will. As a matter of fact, I think we're gonna interview her along with her husband Anthony, because he just put out a new book. He's a horror author, so we're gonna sit back and talk to both of them on January 3rd, and I'm gonna press him to give us some secrets about how he gets independent publishing and see if he's thinking about turning it over to make a script. Because
cool.
He's got his star if he wants it.
he's got his wife. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I guess I'm gonna end it here. You know, this conversation, everything. But thank you so much for calling in, dude, and kind of saving me at that one point. I thought, you know, I felt kind of weird because I did like what I did feel like you were kind of cutting me off or whatever, because I was trying to talk and all of a sudden you would talk and Adam would talk and I was like, why isn't anybody letting me have a word in? You know, blah blah blah. And then I was like, man, what is he trying to steal my show? What's going on here? I was kind of getting like upset and then I realized everybody was going, where am I? Right? So
yeah, that's what happened to me on my first show because it just went dead and I'm like, oh crap. What's going on?
Yeah, well, you know what's funny is I couldn't get Adam on the show until Jay called in originally. And then when Jay, you know, Jay Reel, who did the movie Dawn, I kind of feel bad that I didn't mention that. But when he left, all of a sudden, I couldn't get Adam again, you know. So then when you came on, but then it cut me off or something somehow. And, you know, like, things just got a little crazy and kooky. And I don't know what was going on, you know?
Well, the strange world of Blog Talk Radio. Gotta love
it. No, they usually didn't do that. So you said you're having problems, too? Like, how long ago was that?
The very first show. So about 3 weeks ago.
Jeez. Last show that I had, they could barely hear Rachel Grubb and... and the two people that they have from the 13 Hours in a Warehouse. So the girls from 13 Hours in a Warehouse, they said they couldn't hear them and whatnot, and this audio was bad. And they could hear me, like, completely, but they couldn't hear them. And they were on speakerphone, so I thought that might have been why, but I don't know.
Oh, well, if you take a listen to the one I did last week with Doug and Zafir, they ended up just going on different extensions, but they were talking on the same line. They tried the speakerphone, but it didn't work out real well.
Yeah, I'd love to check that out because I've had I've had Doug Sackman on my show a couple times. I think once to talk to Chris because you want to talk to Chris and stuff, and then once to talk to Ken Hall, you know. And whatnot. And he was promoting the Triple Exorcist and the porn that he was doing. So that was cool. But
basically, I want to make sure if they're coming on, they've got the opportunity to pimp anything that they want. And
trust me, they will take advantage of that because that's what I did. And I love it. I let them take full advantage of it, you know? So I don't know. I'm really excited to see what happens with this show because I got some other cool people that I want to have on the show. We're trying to get Simon Pegg on from Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. We're trying to get him on. But we're also trying to get lots of different people, like Joe was mentioning, the guy who did Suburban Sasquatch and Funkicide and whatnot. And then, I'm also trying to get Danny Wissow from The Room. He did that movie The Room, which is supposed to be the worst movie of all time. You know, the new worst movie of all time that's supposed to be, like, laughably bad. Like, he knows it was bad, but he made it anyway kind of thing.
I don't know. I haven't seen that one yet, so I'll definitely have to. I mean, I've heard
of
it.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've heard of it, and I haven't seen it yet either, so. I want to rent it, I don't know if you can get it through Netflix or not, but, you know what I'm watching tonight before bed? Maniac Cop.
Oh, God.
Have you seen that movie?
Forever. Oh, yeah, Bruce Campbell, that was one of his first roles.
Yeah, first big role other than Ash, so I'm really excited to see that. I know he had, like, a really small part in the second one or whatever, but.
Well, I'm going to try to suffer through Pan's Labyrinth tonight.
I've heard about that. I've heard that's good.
Well, visually, apparently, it's supposed to be stunning, but as far as it goes, for people who've been Americanized, it's really hard to sit there and read the subtitles and enjoy it.
Oh, come on. I really hate people like that.
That's what I've heard.
You know,
I've also heard that it's too brutal to be a children's tale and too much of a children's tale to be an adult epic.
Dude, if I could get William Lustig on my show, I'm going to go crazy. I'm trying to get him so badly. The guy that directed Maniac Cop, as well as directed, he's directed a lot of movies, but including Uncle Sam, which was his last movie that he's directed. I think he's produced a lot more movies since then, but, you know,
I'm trying to think if he didn't he do something on Basket Case too.
I'm trying to see.
It was either Basket Case or Maniac that he did a producer.
Hold on, let me see. You said he produced maybe Basket Case. I don't think he directed. He didn't direct it. No, he didn't direct it.
That was Hennenlotter.
But let's see, did he? I don't know. Basket Case, are you talking about maybe the new version or something, or what?
Mm-mm. Nope.
No, because he didn't produce it.
Let's see here.
And he didn't distribute it.
Let's take a look.
He did produce a movie called Lloyd Kaufman Goes to Hollywood, though.
That sounds like a little short. No, I was, it was the other one. It was Maniac.
Actually, it was a documentary short.
He did. He not only produced it, but he directed Maniac.
Oh yeah, I know. William Lustig. Yeah.
Yeah, which is definitely rocking.
The original Maniac Cop. Yeah. I'm thinking. Yeah, he also directed Maniac Cop 2 and 3.
No, Maniac, the one with Joe Spinell.
Oh, the original Maniac. Yeah, Maniac, the slasher movie.
Yeah, that one. That one is a lot of fun.
The other movie I want to watch that I've never seen, and people are going to kill me, I'm sure Lewis has seen it, is that movie, what is that flick? I'm trying to remember. Chopping Mall.
Oh, God, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard that was really cheesy and kind of fun. I've always wondered if they're ever going to remake that or something. You know, I'm sure they'll do some kind of thing, you know?
Well, with the paranoia of Hollywood, the only things that they really want to remake out of the horror genre are things that the horror genre already considers classics. I'm sure they could probably make a better film, filmic-wise, if they did Maniac again. But then again, it's that harsh street quality that makes it good, yeah.
See, that's why Black Christmas sucks. And that's why all these movies that get made and then remade suck, because they tend to take the movie that they commercialize the movie, you know. And the whole point of these movies, they're remaking Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
And you know how everybody's revolting against it, being trying to sign petitions and trying to shut it down. You know, because...
Well, they even had April Fool's Day on a pre-production.
Right. They've got that. They've got... Well, the only thing I can, that I'm kind of excited for is Prom Night remade. But it got a PG-13 rating.
Well, you know? Once again, it's the way Hollywood's trying to slip in and make money. Because
and they're doing
really...
Terror Train as well, so...
They should take the example of the Fog remake and go R. Because if kids really want to see it, they're going to get in to see it. If it's a PG-13, they're really not going to give a shit about it. But if they see that it's an R, then they're going to try to get into it.
Well, I don't know if the new Terror Train is going to be PG-13 or not, but I wouldn't be surprised because, they're just calling it Train right now.
Wow.
That's what? Is that still the same movie? I wonder.
Well, when I see them trying to remake Pieces or Sleepaway Camp, then I'm done.
They're trying to. I had Felissa Rose on my show a couple of shows ago, and she was talking about her work on Return to Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
And basically, the whole indie world is trying to stop a remake because they're trying to make sure that the rights get to the right people, so that Hollywood doesn't try to buy the rights from them. And that they can't, you know, that because right now I think whoever did Return to Sleepaway Camp, I believe does have the rights, and they're going to make sure not to sell it, because they're not going to, because they don't want, you know, Sleepaway Camp is a movie where it's just another version of, a kid version of Friday the 13th.
Well, and how?
Because that's what it'll be. That's exactly what it's going to be. Because there's not going to be the shock at the end of the movie, right?
Yeah.
Right. There's not going to be that shock at the end of the movie, and otherwise, it's just going to be a little girl who's supposed to be a boy, but they're not going to show the penis, so nobody's going to get it, and then she's going to go around killing people, and then nobody's going to get it, and then at the end, they're going to leave it up for a sequel for Sleepaway Camp 2. And it won't make any, you know, it won't make any sense. The movie would suck. Hollywood just won't care because it's just the only reason they're doing it is because it's the name that'll get them, you know.
Well, and that's the whole factor of look at Sleepaway Camp with the additional that they've done, because they made sequels off of Sleepaway Camp and they were just basically TNA bloodfests. Nothing had the heart or the nice shock value that the original one did, because I tell you, when they pulled back on her, well, him, when they did that reveal, I was just like, you have got to be shitting me.
And it's the scariest reveal too. I mean, with her going, you know, that kind of like heavy breathing and kind of like really grossness to her. I mean, that's just, I don't know. It was just as creepy, you know.
Well, it was something, too, that when we walked into the theater, I never expected it. Never in a million years expected that was going to be the ending. And that was a lot of independent cinema back when I was in my teens, because of the fact that there was going to be stuff that we had no idea was going to show up for shock value. You know, we'd sneak into the R-rated movies just to get a chance to watch them.
We are thinking of getting Felissa Rose in a part for Plan 8.
Oh yeah.
She's definitely in line for Sasquatch vs. Yeti, you know, to play a big part in that. But I'm gonna try to talk into her more about hopefully doing since I talked to her about stuff, and you know, she's really cool. She's really nice. I mean, her husband, I'm a huge fan of as well. So I didn't even realize that they were married until like she told me on her show, and I was like, oh my God, like I didn't even know that. That's awesome.
It'd be a good music resource.
What?
It'd be a good music resource too.
Exactly. And he wants to get into horror music too. And acting and stuff too. So.
No, well, and honestly, that's how we got Tracy Bonham to write the score, because it was nothing that she'd ever done previously. But it was something
for LFA?
Yeah.
That is awesome. Tracy Bonham, man. You got to tell her to remix, what is it, the Mother song.
Well, unfortunately, anything on the first album we can't use because of the fact that I think it's
Electra. It's owned by, like, it's what? What's the company that owns it?
Electra.
Yeah. Yeah,
Or wait a minute, Island. It's Island who owns it. I know we've already been through head knocking with them, but... they're the secondary company, which runs off of Electra Records that she's on right now, were really cool about us being able to use her stuff. Matter of fact, Wind Up Records was pretty gracious about letting us use some of their artists.
Cool.
Which is kind of nice, because the thing that came together first with us for LXA was all the music. I mean,
yeah,
we have literally 27 bands that we're trying to figure out how we can use them. But then again, it's got to be Tracy's score that goes first. So,
Keith Stoddard, the guy that's co-writing stuff with me, he's doing a movie called Blood to Madam. We're going to help him produce it and everything. He's already got like some pretty good people attached to it, including including like Alex Vincent and a few other people like that. And Antonio Moran from Halloween, the first Halloween, first Michael Myers, and stuff like that. We're really excited about that. But he's got some really cool music that we can't reveal yet because, you know, it's not, you know, it's kind of not set in stone or whatever. But, you know, I'm really excited to hear what, you know, what happens with the music that he has and everything like that. And he's trying to get me to have that same music, and it's just not the kind of music I dig, you know. So I won't ever use that music for my movies, you know.
Well,
but,
it depends on what fits the tone, because when you get into editing, you'll find that, that maybe something you didn't think about using before fits perfectly.
Right, but really, if I don't like the music, I won't ever use it just because I wouldn't want to listen. You know what I mean? I don't care if it fits exactly, because I'm sure I could do something else that I like and have it fit. I wouldn't, you know what I mean? It's just not my style.
Oh, yeah, but never say never, because sometimes you'll just find something that just, that hand in glove, that'll fit.
We'll see. When I announce the be able to announce the music and everything that he's got attached, then you'll know what I mean. Trust me, when you see it, because it's not for everybody's taste. But you know what I mean.
Well, no, I understand.
Not saying anything. It's bad. Nothing is bad because the people have a lot of fans. It's just not my. You know, I'm not a fan. So. You know, I really don't dig their music, so, it's not that I don't dig the people themselves, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, sometimes it's the movie itself that's going to give you the sensibility of it, because, I mean, we got Whiskey Daredevils to kick in a soundtrack, to kick in a track, and their hardcore rockabilly, and I was like, I don't know about this, but I dropped them into a certain place, and it's like, man, this sounds great. I mean, it's got energy. It's got the action. By the reverse, we got Bill Moseley to kick in a track from Corn Bugs called Head Cheese, which is very, very strange and eclectic. I didn't know where to run it, but it was just so creepy weird that, you know, I found a place for it.
I don't know who's going to exactly do the score for Plan 8, but we do want a musical score,
mm-hmm.
And we do want to find out, I want to find out how I can duplicate the, you know, be able to duplicate the stuff that they did for Ed Wood, you know, where
yeah.
They had the theremin and stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know, the that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the one that makes the wobbly sounds.
Yeah, the really creepy kind of like whispery sound. I don't know how whistly sounds. Kind of creepy. And I liked it. I really like that kind of sound. I kind of want to put that in the thing, and I want to have a lot of you know, references and things to Plan 9. Without being sued, because you have to understand that the first time that I mentioned Plan 9, or Plan 8 being made, and whatnot, I kind of mentioned it as my homage to Plan 9, right? And all
yeah.
of a sudden, some woman MySpaced me and said she had all the rights to, you know, that to her uncle's estate. Wouldn't tell me who her uncle was, but said she had all the rights to her uncle's estate. And she was going to sue me if I put this movie out. I said, well, don't you understand that Plan 9 is in public domain anyway, so you can't sue me. And she goes, no, it's not in public domain. I have the rights to it, so don't, you know. So I was a little worried, but then I realized you can't really sue somebody over a name of a title. Now, if I don't make any real references to Plan 9, they can't sue me, right?
Sure,
they can't sue me for saying Plan 8 from outer space because you know, everybody uses title. I could use Plan 9 from Outer Space if I want to, as long as it has nothing to do with Plan 9 from Outer Space, the other, you know, original.
Well, and more than likely, she's probably trying to put in the fact that if she owns the rights to Ed Wood's estate, that that she has producerial rights, basically the right to make money off of the name now. Because a lot of things changed around once the big fiasco with Night of the Living Dead happened in 69.
What happened in 19, what was that?
Well, back in 1969 when they released Night of the Living Dead, they released it without a copyright on the film prints.
Oh, right, right. So they had the Night of the Living Dead was originally called something else or something like that. Like, there was a, or they lost the rights to the title, right?
Well, no. Initially it was called Night of the Flesh Eaters, but they didn't like that one. And they changed it over to Night of the Living Dead. But, yeah, basically when they sent out the prints again with the Night of the Living Dead title on it, because Night of the Flesh Eaters didn't test out very well, they forgot to put the copyright on it, so anybody who wanted to bootleg it could bootleg it.
Hmm.
And it took Romero until, I think it was 99, to where he could get some type of rights off of it. And the court gave him jurisdiction to be able to go out and sue anybody who was making copies of it.
Good, good. I don't make copies of it. I love the movie, but, I mean, it's one of the classics. I've never actually seen Day of the Dead yet, and I really want to soon. Because,
Day of the Dead, awesome.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, I love Dawn of the Dead, and I love, the originals, of course, of Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead. And I kind of like the remakes or whatever, but not as much. You know, like, there's still that thing where, you know, I don't think I'm really going to like a remake better than the movie itself ever. You know?
Well, you know, Day of the Dead, the remake's already been done. They've been sitting on
it. Yeah, exactly. Steve Miner did it. And I'm excited to hear about that because I love Steve. I think that...
Search YouTube because they've got the trailer on it with Ving Rhames.
Nice.
Wasn't he
in Dawn of the Dead remake and Day of the Dead?
Yes, he was.
Was he playing the same character or a different character?
You can't really tell. You cannot tell by the trailer. It's only like a 2-minute trailer. But it's basically a lot of night shots, running around, shooting zombies, saying, you know, we've got to get safe and all that stuff.
Oh, another person you should get on your show sometime that I think is just awesome. I've had him on my show before. I'm probably going to have him on my show when his movie starts getting made and getting out there, is Richard Clark, who's doing a movie called Grindr right now, soon, like I think in January, I'm pretty sure. They might have to move up the shoot date, but he's doing a movie called Grindr, and it stars like Danielle Harris and Sid Haig and Bill Moseley and some big-name stars, you know? So I'm really excited to hear what happens with that.
Yeah, actually, I've got my fingers crossed, and we're trying to figure out times to do two people that I'm really, really excited about having on. One is having a whole 2 hours dedicated to Harry Manfredini,
I was kind of upset because I didn't really like, no offense to, you know, Ethan when he helped me out and everything, but I didn't really like doing, like, you know, only, like, half-hour segments with everybody because...
Mm.
You know, and that's what I do with Adam, but Adam's kind of busy, you know. And I felt like I could have probably had him on for some more, but I just didn't want to keep bugging him, you know. Like, Adam's kind of busy, but, and so is Harry, I'm sure, but, yeah, Harry sounded like he wanted to still talk, and some other people wanted to come on and talk, but, you know, say I had gotten Ari on my show for, like, a whole hour or two, you know, that would have been freaking awesome, you know, Ari Lehman.
Ari can talk. Ari is a great guy. He's got some good stories.
And, you know, I'd love to have all these guys on my show, but for, like, longer segments and stuff. So, I don't know. It just didn't work out that way. But
well, if things work out right, we'll be able to get Harry sometime I think it's we're tentatively talking sometime in mid-February. And the one I'm really hoping to bag to sit down and talk to as far as the actor star genre goes is Tony Todd.
Yeah, he seems like a really cool guy.
He is. He is. When we interviewed him out at the convention, he was one of the two people that were really, really straight up and forthcoming with all our answers. I mean, he didn't really truck to any of the straight fan bullshit questions, which made him a perfect interview.
One person I'm really trying to get on that I'm really excited about that I haven't been able to. One of my friends knows him and is trying to talk to him, but hasn't been able to because he's sick. Not the guy that I'm trying to get, but my friend's been sick. He hasn't been able to call him up, but it's Scott Spiegel, who co-wrote Evil Dead 2 and produced Hostel and stuff like that. And he did
a movie
called Intruder. That's just I love. And he's actually, I'm going to tease him because, well, not tease him, but if I ever interview him, I'm going to talk about how I still quote one of the quotes I read from, because I've interviewed Josh Becker, right, a long time ago, who used to be roommates with him, and they were working on a movie for William Lustig called Hit List. But at one point, it was called Hell to Pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, what is it, about a haunted hairpiece? Hell to Pay.
Very nice.
And William just looked at him like, what the hell are you, what the hell are you talking about? Didn't even get it. William had, no sense of humor whatsoever, apparently. But they would, they would make jokes like that. That's how he is. And so, and they were, asking, the title is called Hit List. And they're like, all right. So where do you want the hit list in it? What are you talking about? You want a hit list, right? He's like, no. We don't need a hit list. What are you talking about? There's no hit list in the movie. Okay. That's kind of weak, that just doesn't make any sense. But they wrote this.
Had one.
Yeah, I mean, that would have at least made sense.
Speaking of Evil Dead, we're going to have Tom Sullivan January 10th. So,
yeah, I'm also trying to get Ted Raimi on my show. Ted's actually been interested in coming on. So if I get Ted and Scott on my show, I'll have a whole bunch of people that's worked for that, for that group. Because I've had Gary Jones on my show, who did, a lot of the special effects and stuff, and later on went to do, Mosquito and Jolly Roger, Massacre at Cutter's Cove, which he totally did not want to really talk about when he got interviewed by me.
Okay.
He just didn't. He had such a bad experience with the asylum that he just wanted to. He talked about it, though, but it sounded so painful to him,
Well, you should bounce off of the friends off of MySpace page, because I've got Tom up. He's always been a complete gentleman.
Yeah, I know. I think I've talked with Tom, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I've talked to him yet or not, but I know I've been wanting to, because he's been working with, Amy Lynn Best, and stuff now. He's been doing a lot of stuff for them and doing cameos and other things for them. And that's really cool. And I'm really glad to see him kind of going back into the effects, right?
Well, yeah, because that's what his love is. I mean, for crying out loud, the guy made all the effects for...
I just don't understand why he, stopped making them. And that's another... That would be one question I'd ask is, what happened? Why did after Evil Dead... I believe it was him. I was reading a thing about one of the guys from the Detroit area that didn't like Sam because in the book that I was reading, I think it was the Bruce Campbell book. Tom Sullivan Was it Tom Sullivan? I don't want to say it was him, because if it wasn't, then this is going to come off mean. But somebody was, like, hearing that, you know, the name Sam Raimi, was like, is he, you know, oh, my God, that sounds like you're Iranian. I don't really want to deal with you. Or something like that, you know? Like, because it was at that time period where everybody was really kind of scared about that kind of stuff, you know? About Iranians.
Yeah,
kind of applies today, too, I guess.
Well, that's something that we're definitely going to talk about as well, because he did have a short absence from...
Really, yeah. So definitely talk to, you know, yeah, I can't wait to hear that show, because that should be a really good, interesting show. And you're going to do it for like an hour, right?
No, we've got him for two.
Oh, for 2 hours. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Everybody who's signed on and agreed to do the show, I've got him for 2 hours. Which is like, you know, hey, you know, every 15 minutes I'll be pimping out anything that you want me to do, and it's not going to be just straight out fanboy questions. We're gonna hook up and really get in depth and into detail about, you know, what you do and you know, basically your whole take on independent film, because, you know,
yeah,
my
exactly.
Whole plot is for independently speaking is to make sure that if there's somebody out there who's enthusiastic about making a movie, that they're going to get some type of insight into making a flick, whether it be on the producerial side, being a director, a writer, a composer. I mean, we even have Peter John Ross going to come in later on in February or March to talk about editing and how crucial it is for post-production and, you know, getting your sound right and all that.
Cool. I'm really excited to hear. I'm glad that you started your own show. You know, I think it's really great. I just know that a lot of the shows that have kind of spawned from me, there's only a few that actually have lasted, but it sounds like you're just going to go for a while. But a lot of people had started one, and then all of a sudden they kind of gotten bored with it or whatever, you know what I mean? Like they've gotten actual, you know, lives, you know, so they can't really... You know, one of my friends had such a great time over at my house, you know, when I was doing a show with him, mm-hmm. that him and his friend created a show called The Monday Night Hangover. And it was just supposed to be people calling in talking about their weekend, you know?
That's
and
not Pepe and Rat, is it?
What?
That's not Pepe and Rat, is it?
Pepe and Rat? I don't...
Yeah. Because technically it's Joe and Rat who do this... who do one? Oh God, what is it? I'm going to be on it next Friday talking about LXA. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
That. No, this is Vince and Patrick. both of them being good friends of mine from, you know, back in the day. Patrick had actually come on and you know, come on the show to kind of goof off with me, because it was like post my birthday. So we were just kind of having fun. I was like, oh, let's do a radio show. I was like, all right, cool. So we set one up, and, you know, he came over and drank, and we talked, and he wanted to play a game called Guess What John's Doing, because I was peeing at one point. And, you know, it was kind of a goofy thing. And then I started pissing him off because I started getting a little drunk, and I started mentioning stuff that I shouldn't have mentioned about our work. You know, about the place that we used to work at. Well, he still works at that. I don't work at it anymore. You know. Not because of the show, but, you know, that was kind of the interesting thing. So, I don't know. So, whatever. So, anyway, yeah, we mentioned some stuff, and it was kind of goofy. And what I'm really excited for is I'm really, really badly trying to get a lot of the VSQ people on my show. Don't know how. I've gotten the only person that's semi-related to the VSQ stuff is Andy Milonakis.
Mm-hmm.
I've had him on my show before. But other than that, I haven't gotten really any of the people from, like, Kevin Smith's group, you know? And,
yeah, actually, I've written not only Smith, but Mosier as well, because I love Kevin Smith, but to be honest with you, I would love to hear more from Scott Mosier, because he's the kind of producer that, you know, he got the bucks. He got a lot of indie stuff made, and I think he would be great for a rough and tumble 2 hours of conversation. Oh, by the way, those two guys who are interviewing me next Friday are they have a blog talk called Two Boobs and a Show.
If you do like a blog talk show soon, do I don't know if you have yet, but do horror movie fans. Have you heard of them?
Mm-mm.
I just found out about them today because they were interviewing Rachel Grubb, and and they're awesome. And Heather Amos from their group, they were interviewing them, and they were just and they're just really interesting, people. They know a lot about independent film. They know a lot about horror, and they know to ask the right questions. So, if you ever get a show or like an invite to, come on their show, definitely do it,
Well, to celebrate the LXA, we're actually, for the Two Boobs in the Show, we're actually going to be doing a drinking game while they do the interview.
Nice. I used to do that. I don't drink anymore because I got into too much trouble with it. So I don't drink anymore, but at least not for a while. But, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, to the chagrin of my friends while I was making LXA, I promised not to touch a drop until we were completely out of principle.
Actually, was the Foy Wonder mentioned on his article about your thing on Dread Central? It mentioned that he'd hope that you'd be drinking while doing that movie, But
I love everybody
else. Really?
Oh yeah. I ended up for the budget itself. A fifth of the budget actually went to alcohol. So I spent a fifth for a bunch of fifths to make sure that the characters were having a good time. Plus, if you've got somebody there, the Ohio law is you're not allowed to serve from 2:30 a.m. till 5 a.m.
Do you have AIM by any chance?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm going to send you my AIM name and whatnot. And there's a lot of things I'd like to talk to you about, but I don't want to do it on air, and I'm afraid to do it.
Well, Nathan, you can always hit my messenger.
On MySpace, I don't really know if I really want to do it written though. Like unless it was like on AIM where a lot of that stuff's not really saved, unless people save it.
Oh no! I mean messenger. The only one I have is. Because I don't use AIM. There's just too many bugs.
Oh, Yahoo Messenger. I don't do Yahoo Messenger either.
No, it's just Windows Messenger.
I don't do Windows Messenger either. I only do AIM because otherwise I just get everything all mixed up because I don't really, I don't have too many friends on Messenger, MSN. So, so it ends up that I don't really talk to too many people and then, And that's the same way with Yahoo. I don't really talk to too many people on Yahoo, so I don't usually get on it,
No, yeah, I gave up my Yahoo a long time ago. But
did you give up your AIM too?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was like I was saying, there was too many bugs in it that was messing with my laptop. So I just got rid of it, and once I did I found out that life was a lot sweeter. If you ever Skype, that's what I'm using right now is my Skype account, and that's always free.
I guess I'll probably just talk to you through MySpace message. But if I really want to talk about this stuff, because I don't really want to talk about it on here because too many problems and can't really whatever. We'll see.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, I'm gonna let you go so you can wrap this up.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, dude. Dude, we'll have you back on sometime, maybe to pimp more LXA stuff, to actually maybe have like a whole LXA show
Well,
maybe
you like say shot glasses don't come in until the end of January, so.
Well, let's we'll try to get some of your cast members too and stuff like that, and try to make a whole Alex Bay show. You know,
sure.
Get a whole bunch of people from there. So, you know,
yeah.
That'd
yeah,
be pretty
the kids
cool.
Are talkative.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Hey, have a great night, Jonathan.
All right. You too, man.
Bye.
Bye. All right. That was Jeff from LXA. And, you know, we had some really cool people on here tonight. We had Adam Green, who was a main thing. Sorry, this whole stuff was just crazy. We had Lewis and his friend. And we had Joe, so we had Jay Real. So that was really cool. I had a good time and enjoyed this. I'm really looking forward to what happens with the next of Law Talk Radio. Thank you. Have a good night.